Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
Be Baba Lula. I had to come up with something different, you know?
I'm shocked.
Are you? Be Baba Lula. She's my baby.
Okay. I don't think that's the way it goes.
Oh, sure it is.
Really?
Be Baba Lula. She is my baby. There you go.
I was going to say hum a couple of bars for him, but I don't think that's right.
Be Baba Lula. I don't mean maybe.
I just need my baby.
Anyway, how you doing?
We've got to come up with a better
intro. No, we don't. No, we don't? This is how maybe that's why we don't have any listeners. They run as soon as they hear this.
No, because, you know, our guest was on here earlier, you know, bragging about her brand new podcast with, like, what do they got, like 8 episodes or something?
No, 56 or something, and like over 1,000.
What?
Between 700 and 1,000 listeners every week.
You know, we
barely break 300 on a given week.
What are you talking about? Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Barely. Anyway, so
do you know why that happens, right?
Why is that?
I feel that it's because our listeners, they're not engaged with us as hosts because we haven't given them a pet name.
No.
You don't think that's it?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, but this is still money month.
Jim is waving his hands at me to stay on track.
No, I'm not. I'm just talking with my hands. You should know me by now. So it's money month.
It's money month.
Right? We're going to talk numbers today. We're going to talk pricing today.
And I think it's interesting how we reached out to several speakers, and like most of them, hee-hawed around about, and then we asked our actual guest.
That's on waiting, yes.
And she said, hell yeah.
Yeah, she was happy to do it.
She was happy to do it. Because you know what she's going to say? She's going to say, Jim, Robert, I've looked at your website, and you suck. It'll be fun. So you had a rough week?
Well, it's only just begun.
It's only just begun. Let's just bring her on. It'll be a lot more interesting. I got no banter today.
This is Mary Fisk Taylor, and we're happy to have her. I'm so excited. Go ahead.
Go ahead. As long as I don't have to sing, I'm happy to talk about money. Just don't make me sing.
You have to sing something.
We've only just begun.
Nope, there'll be no singing. No singing? I'm not allowed.
Well, hang on. While we're on the whole singing topic, what would be your like favorite band?
Dave Matthews Band.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
You going to go there?
Yes.
I thought you were more like a James Taylor girl.
Oh, God, no. I like James Taylor, don't get me wrong. But no, I followed the Grateful Dead and then became a Dave fan when I was in college because that's when they started. They started in Charlottesville, which is, you know, I went to school here. And so I'm a huge fan. This will be the first year in probably, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years that I haven't seen a Dave Matthews concert live. And that's not true because I saw him in February. So there we go.
That's cool. That's impressive.
I'm impressed they're still alive.
What? They're not that old. They're my age.
But yeah, they're not that old.
Again, I'm still impressed they're still alive.
Oh, I mean, my God.
It isn't the age. It's the miles.
Yeah, but they're pretty wholesome group. They're very much about, I mean, most of them live in Oregon or Washington State now. They're very much about holistic living, environment, you know, sustainability.
We should call them up and get them on the podcast.
You should. If you do, I'll fly to Oklahoma to be there.
Well, you know, I like Dave Matthews.
Or she can't drive to Oklahoma. She'd have to like ride an electric scooter. I know Dave Matthews Band, but I'm like completely blanking out on any of their hits.
I can hear him singing, but I don't know what he's saying.
So that's Bob Dylan.
No, not because he's not saying the words. I'm just, I can hear the melody, but I don't know the words.
Okay, Mary. So what's one of the famous songs that might
probably drop? One of his more famous songs, not one of my favorites, but one of his famous songs would be like Crash. I don't know if that rings a bell at all. Is anything ringing a bell with you guys?
My
favorite is Dreaming Tree.
Dreaming Tree?
Crash Into Me. Does that sound familiar at all?
Yeah, that does. I just don't know the melody.
I now understand why they're living in Oregon.
Ants marching, where are you going? Well, Satellite, Gray Street, Jimmy Thing, You and Me, Dream Girl.
You're now reading that off your phone.
No, she's good.
No, she's no, reading no, off her
Tripping
phone.
Billies. No, I mean, that's probably like was one of their last sets. No, I literally have been a fan. So he was a bartender in Charlottesville, and his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, went to UVA. And I used to go and hear him sing when he would sub in with the Boyd Tinsley Band. And then him and Leroy and Carter all started the Dave Matthews Band, and they started in a little place in Charlottesville. So I've been listening to him for that long, like a long time.
Oh, Jim's trying to play his.
He's doing a good job. That's Dave.
You know what? Yeah. I think I actually have them on my iPad.
You've got to love him. There's nothing not to love about Dave Matthews. Come on.
Okay, so I got to ask.
All the technology we have here, and you couldn't have just connected the Bluetooth and played it in there?
Hey, you know, that's how I roll, you know. But anyway.
Speaking of rolling, do I need to bring up the generator incident?
Sure. What was the incident?
So we lost power in Oklahoma like we always do during thunderstorms.
Uh-huh.
And Jim calls me up, and I'm like, man, so how's the thing going? My power was out for 3 hours, and I couldn't upload my wedding photos. And he's like, yeah, mine's been out for like 10 hours. And I'm like, well, good thing you're not going to lose any food in your icebox since you have a generator. And he's like, oh, crap, I forgot about that.
No, it wasn't
he actually
like that. It
won wasn't... a generator. He didn't even pay for it. He won the generator.
It's a beast. 7,000 watts.
7,000 watts. He can run his house and half the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And completely right. forgot about it.
So anyway, just and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of music, but one more.
But I'm gonna get one more in.
One more in, yes.
One more in
because somebody it's this artist is somebody I always go to, and it's not because of his pop music, it's because of all of it. He's got some blues, and that's John Mayer. You know,
John Mayer.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. He's an excellent
guitarist.
Like he's horrible.
Oh, stop. You're just saying that.
He's a hack.
Oh, no he's not. He's incredibly talented, I think.
He's very talented, but in 10 years, he won't even be a blip on the radar.
That's a damn lie, dude. No, he's been around for a long time, dude.
Terry does not get to talk during the podcast. You can sit there and work and make daddy some money.
But hey, my genres of music, you know, I can go everywhere. So I love music. Absolutely love music. So anyway.
Me too.
That being said.
So now we know where we can find her. It's just follow Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we'll find her there.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Yes.
That's awesome. So let's get into our topic.
Yeah. So pricing. So let's start with a new photographer. You know, somebody that's kind of thinking about going into the business of photography.
Because to me, we have a lot of new photographers. I'm so glad that Mary jumped on here.
Yeah, me too.
Actually, Terry made a comment, and I was like, yeah, she's probably really busy. And Jim's like, hey, I'll call her up. She likes Dave Matthews. I like Dave Matthews. And so let's just talk to new photographers, because we constantly get the question of, well, I'm not that good. I just started out, so my prices should be low.
Right.
And I feel that is incorrect, that your prices is a mathematical formula that doesn't have anything to do with the emotions of your photography. I think I could be wrong because I'm driving a Kia and not a Range Rover.
Oh.
So why don't you fill us in?
Did you actually? No, you didn't know. Okay, never mind.
No. Do you drive a Range Rover?
I just bought one.
Oh, God.
We may or may not do some research on our guests prior to getting on here.
Wow.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, you're exactly right, Robert. I'm obviously, you know, I love the fact that I'm in this industry and have been, you know, grateful to be in, you know, a great place where, you know, and have an amazing business partner. And I didn't do any of this on my own. And I've learned so much from all of my mentors, and being a part of my affiliate and PPA has been a blessing. So, you know, I'll give you that. I want to say that first, because I take no credit for so much that's been given to me. But the great news is you take all that information and you put your own thumbprint on it and you turn it into what you turn it into. And unfortunately, your estimation of, you know, where a lot of young or new photographers are is exactly that. They think, well, I don't want to charge that much, or I'm not going to charge too much until. And that's a huge mistake, because that until, or at least I've seen, and I'm sure y'all would agree, it just never comes. You know, you get started and then you get in this grind and then it's hard to break out. of that mold you've created.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
So if we talk about pricing, you know, I think that's it's important to, you know, to understand a philosophy about pricing. So, you know, cost of goods, or, you know, cost of goods sold. That's what I call them. I mean, some people call them, what is the other thing they call them? Cost of either COGS or there's another name and I can't think of it, but cost of goods sold. That's just a starting point. So the thing is that we all have these hard costs in our business, and you can think of it this way. There's managerial costs, which, you know, are the costs that we have to incorporate into our pricing. And then there's value, which might come later. I'll give you that. That might come later. But those hard costs, whether it's your general expenses or your costs of goods, those exist. Those exist, you know, in your business every single day. Now, you don't, if you don't have any business, you still have hard costs. You have these general expenses. You have rent, or you have insurance, or you have, you know, maybe you have an employee, or you, there, you know, there's just bills. There's light bills, there's phone bills, there's taxes, there's things that need to be paid. And, you know, we need to incorporate those costs into what it costs us to actually make the product, right? So you combine those, and, you know, through the years, the mathematical equation that you speak of has definitely changed, because when I set up my pricing 26 years ago, it was film. And things have definitely changed with digital. And so much great has come from digital. But the thing that I dislike the most about what happened with digital is we have a lot of photographers that say, well, I don't have hardly any costs. I mean, I only pay a couple bucks to print it at the lab, and I'm doing all the other work myself, which makes me say, okay, cool. That's great. What are you paying yourself to do the work? Well, I don't pay myself to do the work. I mean, I'm just getting started, so I don't really pay myself, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the slippery slope, I think, that a lot of young photographers or new photographers, and I don't mean young as an age, I mean young as in the business young, fall into, is that they think, well, I can upload this to the lab. It only costs me like $5. If I double it, triple it, even, you know, multiply it by three or four, I'm making great money. Well, when it comes down to it, you're not. That's never going to be a sustainable and profitable business model when you're thinking about pricing. So I don't know if you guys agree with that, but that's my observation through the years.
Yeah. So as far as like something that I had heard a while back, and you can touch on this and talk about it. I always heard, what do you want to make? What do you need, or what do you want to make each year? What does that look like? What number is that? And then you go from that. And I forget where it goes after that.
Kind of increase it after that, baby.
Yeah, but I mean,
because we have two different kind of costs in almost any business.
Sure.
Is we have, like you said, we have our cost of operations. And that happens whether we have a client or not.
Mm-hmm. So exactly. Every general month, expenses, right?
We've got to pay our insurance. We have to pay our PPA dues, which I feel that is important. You know, we have our car payments, our house payment. We have all these expenses that come out every month, whether we're shooting or not. And then we have the cost of goods to a client. If client picks package A, there's a certain amount of cost of goods that's associated with the price we're going to charge.
Yes. And those prices, I think, so you're exactly right. So when we're looking at so there's three, and the third piece is value. So we won't even go to value yet. We'll just concentrate on those two. So the piece that I think a lot of people stumble with in the cost of goods, or the, you know, those hard costs, is that they discount so much. They think, well, it's just this at the lab. And then they forget, wait a minute, I've got to download the card. I've got to back up the card. I've got to acquire the image. I've got to retouch the image. I've got to store the image. I've got to do a backup for the store. And then I'm going to upload it to the lab. And then I'm going to pay for shipping. And oh, they used a credit card, so there's credit card processing fees. And then I'm going to put it in a beautiful bag with a ribbon, and I'm going to send them a thank you note. You guys get the picture, right? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what happens quite often is they think their cost of goods is their lab bill or their frame bill or maybe their album bill, and they're leaving out all these other pieces. And it's so important to look at all of those. And it's also incredibly important, even if you're not, which I do not and would never recommend this, but even if you're not paying yourself for the work you're doing, you should incorporate it into your costs. Because what if one day you have to. And, you know, COVID has been a great example for a lot of photographers where they weren't paying someone to do the work. And all of a sudden they found themselves in a position where they had to, because maybe them or a family member was ill and they couldn't, and they needed to pay somebody to do the work. Maybe they had to outsource their artwork or this or that. And all of a sudden they were realizing, wow, I'm not making any money because I'm not compensating for any of those other costs. Like, you should be incorporating a decent wage times 2 or 3 hours in all of your costs, just because that's what you would have to pay somebody to handle the file management, handle the artwork and retouching, et cetera, and production, et cetera, et cetera. So I really struggle with that piece and teaching photographers how important that is. And it's way more than just what it costs to print it at the lab. I mean, it's so much more than that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because, you know, I grew up with film, and when mm-hmm. digital came out, I'm not sure why we became our own processors.
I don't either, Robert. Like, that's great.
What happened to that? It's like, oh, I have digital, so now I don't need a lab anymore. I can do everything myself. So mm-hmm. our workload increased, but our pay didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what we did is we created not only not a profitable business, but now we're not sustainable, because I don't care who you are, or how young you are. And admittedly, I'm not there anymore. But I mean, you know, I mean, I went through school. I've been known to burn the midnight oil or stay out, you know, whatever, but you cannot sustain that type of a workload and plus not make any money and not burn out. I mean, we see it every day in this industry. So, you know, I think you mentioned you kind of decide what you want to make. So, you know, there is a basic rule of thumb, and I'll just throw these numbers out there and you guys can, you know, agree or not, but there's a basic rule of thumb that to be a profitable and sustainable business, you want to operate at a certain cost of sales, right?
Correct.
So, you know, for a long time, 30% was a number, 20% is a number, whatever it is. But what that means is you take all of your costs and take all everything it costs you to make that product. So put the general expenses aside for a minute, but everything it costs to make that product. So if you're delivering a 16 by 20 canvas, right?
Okay.
Everything it costs me to make that product, and you multiply it by what you want your cost of sales to be. The lower your cost of sales, I mean, the lower your cost of sales, the higher your profit. So if you're operating at a 20% cost of sales, that means you're multiplying all of that by 5. Okay. Now, this isn't how you have to do it, but this is kind of an older way. And some of your younger salespeople or pricing people out there might laugh at this, but it's worked for me for 26 years and I still do it today. So if I multiply that by 5, that's going to give me what that should cost. So if I look at that 16 by 20 and I count in, you know, 3 hours of production, outsourcing artwork, printing, mounting, shipping, credit card processing, et cetera, and I'd say it costs me $40. The minimum I should charge for that, the minimum I should charge for that would be times 5, right? So it, you know, it'd 200. Be $200. I charge way more than that for a 16 by 20, because that's where value is going to come into play. And it probably costs you a lot more than $40. I'm just trying to throw out numbers I can actually multiply in my head.
Oh, no. I can, but when we're doing pricing, let's stick with the easy numbers.
Yeah.
Yes. So what happens here is when you look at that cost of sales number, you look at how the way you want to operate. And I feel like if you're in a commercial space, you absolutely need to operate below 30% cost of sales. Smaller boutique home studios might be able to operate a little bit higher, but in my experience, 20% is really important. If you could get to that number, it would really change your whole life, quite frankly.
Right. Now we're talking 20% of the cost of goods to produce an item that a client is going to purchase.
Right. Because what you're doing is you're rolling in your profit, you're rolling in your expenses, you're rolling in your salary. Because when you do that, you've covered your cost of goods, right? You've covered your cost of goods with the initial transaction, but that additional times 5, right? That 10%, 10%, 10% extra, what you're giving yourself is the money to cover your general expenses, your mortgage, your rent, your insurance, whatever. You're giving yourself hopefully profit, which I'm a profit first professional, and that's really important to me. So profit comes off the top for me.
Really?
You're making sure you're getting payroll taken care of, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how you really and legitimately, in my opinion, should price.
Okay.
Bare minimum.
So, and I think this is absolutely correct.
This is gold.
This is gold. But there's some things that I want to get out there for the new people. Mm-hmm. And, okay. and even experienced photographers as well, okay? So the photographer goes out, and mm-hmm. how many times does this happen? Like, they're there's nothing wrong with being a part-time photographer or weekend warrior, okay?
100%.
We're all in this together, and if you can dedicate 10 hours a week, that's great. If you can dedicate 100, that's fantastic. But they get a camera, and we'll use the soccer mom that everybody has used for a long time. So they buy a camera. Their husband buys them a camera, take photographs of the kids doing sports. The kids mm-hmm. grow up and move out of the house, and now the housewife, soccer mom, doesn't have anything to do. But everybody says, my God, those images you took at soccer were so amazing, you should have your own business.
Right.
And then the soccer mom says, well, if I can charge like $50 to go shoot a game, and that's enough money to get my hair permed that week, you know, I'm happy. And then mm-hmm. 6 years go down the road, and the husband leaves, and all of a sudden, the wife decides that the business that I thought I have is no more than a hobby.
Yes.
So what would be, okay, at what point would that part-time photographer decide that, okay, now it's time for me to switch over from part-time to full-time because I'm able to support myself? I mm-hmm. read, now this has been like 10 years ago in the PPA, where there was, in a little survey, the benchmark, mm-hmm. it had made a comment that whenever you reach, I think it was 120 or 130% of what you bring home in your daytime job, then that's a great time to switch over to full time, because you're going to lose intangible benefits with your job that you're going to have that extra money to pay for that you're not seeing. But is mm-hmm. there, like, what's that advice to that new person that's going to make that transition? I mean, because we all can't start off shooting a $20,000 wedding.
Right. So, you know, the way it works, now, there's a couple great points you brought up there, and hopefully I'll be able to get to the other one. But to answer your question, and I'm not sure what the benchmark said, honestly, it's been so long since I read it, but you know, if you want to transition from, you have a job or two and you really want to go full-time in photography, you need to sit down and have a real come to Jesus with yourself, your partner, or if you can, a financial expert, and sit down and say, this is what I need to make. And then you need to realistically look at your avatar or your ideal client, meaning who you can serve. Who you can serve in your community, which will determine what type of business you're going to have. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you live in, you know, XYZ town, you may not be looking at having $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 sales or weddings ever. You know what I mean? I'm not saying right. You never can graduate into other areas, but let's just be realistic and let's, you know, be bare bones here. So you may say, you know, I want to be the general photographer and I want to be able to do this. And realistically, I'm not going to charge what Mary Fitz Taylor charges and, you know, or I don't charge what, you know, somebody charges in, you know, New York City. I charge what I charge in Richmond, Virginia, because I know what the market will bear. So you look at that and you figure out, I need to be able to cover insurance. I need to be able to, you know, take a vacation. I need to cover the kit, all these things. You look at your expenses and you need to look at your photography and say, okay, what do I think I can photograph? How many sessions? What do I think my average can be on these different product lines? If you want to offer weddings or seniors, headshots, families, or you're going to do it all because you're the town, you know, photographer and you want to do, you know, be the general photographer, that's fine. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. You need to look at it and say, all right, well, I need to make this much money, which means I need to do 50 family sessions at this average. I need to do 25 headshots at this average. I need to do 15 weddings at this average, et cetera, et cetera. And you start projecting. You're projecting your sessions and your averages that you think you can do. And let's be face it. If you are someone who wants to become a photographer right now or open a studio, you've probably had an experience with another photographer.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've probably paid for photography. So you could base it on what you've invested in photography, because I feel like what we put out there, we attract. So I think that's usually a pretty good indicator. So I think that you have to look at it. And if your accountant says you need to make $60,000 a year minimum, preferably 80, so you can start investing in retirement, you need to look at how many sessions can I crank out a week? How much of an average do I think I can pull out of the gate? Like, you don't want to, you can't wait, you know? So until you feel comfortable that you can do that, in your photography job, then you need to stick with other work. And, you know, it all starts, Robert and you guys, it all starts with charging appropriately from the very beginning, because what we find, and whether it's sports pictures or it's the soccer dad or mom or whatever, you know, whatever it is, there's no disrespect, whatever it is, unfortunately it's exactly that. Oh my God, I love your images, do this for me. And then you're like, well, you know, could you just give me $100 and I'll, you know, I'm going to retouch these 20 images and I'm going to deliver them to you in Dropbox or on a USB. And you're like, well, it doesn't cost me anything. Well, first of all, that's just BS. I'm going to throw the BS flag, because they have taken what only you can give them. You've given them your vision, your estimation and creativity, lighting, you know, capturing, you know, the expressions. Only you can do that. That's the one thing we all can bring to the table. We can create what we create, and it comes from us. It comes from our soul. It comes from our heart. And you've probably sat there and agonized or worked on these images for hours, and maybe to the detriment of not, you know, getting the kids to bed on time, or not taking care of yourself, or not getting laundry done. I mean, we've all done these things. Oh, yeah. And you're getting $100, and then that's fun the first few times, but then it starts building. And here again, we've backed ourselves into not only not profitable, because you're making no money an hour, it's costing you money and it's costing you quality of life. But now you don't have a sustainable business, and it's really hard to dig out of that hole. I mean, at least that's the experience I've had with photographers trying to grow a photography business.
I think you made some excellent headway in understanding for the new person.
Okay.
I really love that. And when I get questions about pricing, I try and just tell the person, you have to take the emotion out of the equation.
And would you go one step further, and you have to, you know what, it's all about mindset. And I'm such a nerd about
No.
I'm a big reader, but it's all about mindset, guys. If you can't take the emotion out of it, I totally agree. But if you cannot put aside your fear for a hot second, then just maybe wait, because you have got to get over that. I can't, I won't, not me, I'm not good enough. You can't do it. Like the fear, the gripping, heart-wrenching fear of actually charging what you deserve and charging what it's going to be for you to actually be a professional. Professional, yeah, lighting and all that stuff, it's so important, don't get me wrong. But I'm sorry, you are not a professional until you are charging what you are worth and you are getting what you deserve and you can say it and look them in the eye and not feel like you're going to throw up.
or guilty.
I love that. I think that pricing, proper pricing, is the number one stressor for all photographers.
Yes.
Because,
it is.
And I do it, you know, most of my weddings is they start at $1,800, which definitely is not worth the amount of time I put into it and the heart and the energy. And those keep increasing. Yeah. But, you know, you reach that point where it's like, okay, at $3,000, I'm not hitting the weddings. So having some income is better than zero income. And then that gives me an opportunity to choose, do I take it or not take it based on how good the client is. We've never had a bridezilla, ever. Terry and I both meet with all of our clients. And sometimes the red flag comes up and we say, this is not a good fit. However, with that said, just so people know that my entry is $1,800, there have been weddings that I griped about afterwards. But in hindsight, if I'd have been paid $5,000 for that same wedding, I wouldn't have been griping so much. And I feel that pricing is the huge, it's the biggest pressure point for photographers. It's why photographers bitch so much online. Is they're unhappy? They complain about their clients. They're always being negative. They're always like beating their chest about all this shit. But if they got paid what they deserve and what they're worth and had the good customer experience, then I think that we would be much happier as an industry.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree. The only thing I would say is you say, well, we don't get the brides at 3,000. Then what the advice I would offer to someone in that position is then you need to look at your brand and you need to look inward, because those brides exist. I mean, 3,000
is
nothing in wedding photography right now. You know what I'm saying? So you need to look at it and go, okay, what am I not putting out there? What am I not putting out in the universe? What is my brand not conveying that I'm worth $3,000? Because I know my work is. So what pieces am I missing? Am I in the wrong marketing funnels? Am I in the wrong, you know what I'm saying? So don't discount it because you think you can. And, you know, maybe 3,000 is the wrong number. Maybe you have to go to five because maybe that mid-range Brian just doesn't exist where you are. You have to go high or low. Maybe that mid-range, and that is disappearing across the country. I would say, or at least that's been my experience. But you're exactly right. You know, you don't complain to me about how hard you worked at that wedding and what you made because you got what you asked for.
I'm writing that down. That's going to be the title.
Yeah, you
got. No, I'm serious.
You got what you asked for.
You got what you asked for. I'm writing that down right there. Okay, yeah. So I love this, and because you are a PPA board member,
I am.
Which I'm very proud. I get to talk to somebody from the PPA board members. So
I'm very proud to be here.
One thing that I find interesting, and I like to call these people, and this is along the same line as pricing. I like to call these people the professional photo student. I'm sure you're aware of them. It's the ones that go to every single workshop, every PPA convention, every little red schoolhouse, and you never really see them making any money. But then when you run into them and ask them how their business is going, oh, no one will pay what I'm worth. Nobody will do this. Nobody will do that. I don't have any money. They're, you know, sleeping in the parking lot in their car because they can't afford to get into the hotel. And I'm just like, hey, here's the deal, okay? If you want to go to imaging and you have an expense of 5 days in a hotel, your imaging fee, you're going to spend some money in the trade show because that happens to everybody. That money needs to be part of your business plan because that's money that you're going to have to pay. So that needs to be part of your cost of goods. That's your operating expenses. At the end of the year, if I want to go to imaging and I'm going to sit down and say it's going to cost me $2,000 for everything, I need to add monthly that amount of money so that I can afford to do that. Don't put yourself in a strapped situation because you feel that going to imaging is going to give you that pearl that all of a sudden is going to make you famous the next week after. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, sure. So obviously I love that people come to imaging, but anybody who's ever studied with me or taken a class with me or heard me speak, I also would not say ever to spend any money that you don't have. So, you know, there's so many facets here and we could talk about pricing for a week and not even, you know, scrape the surface because there's so much. But first of all, yes, you need to prepare and save, and certainly education, seminars, and, you know, memberships or subscriptions are all part of your operating expenses. You're exactly right. If it would help, maybe this is what I could offer. There's two pieces there. First of all, the person who does all that and then says, well, no, this isn't good because nobody will pay it. That's a mindset issue. They have a fixed mindset and they need to have a growth mindset. I would highly recommend them read the book by Dr. Carol Dweck, Mindset. And maybe that'll help them shift into a more of a growth mindset. Because if you're saying that to yourself and if you're saying that to other people, you believe it and it doesn't matter what I say or what I do, I'm not going to change your mind. So until you can shift your mind and shift your mindset, that's how it's going to be. So that's one piece. The other piece is, if y'all remember, did any of y'all have like where your mother or grandmother like had a Christmas fund or a little vacation fund or the coffee can in the kitchen that you would put money in?
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. We're there. Okay. Yeah. We're with you. We're writing notes.
Okay, cool. So this is it. So if you have that idea, so think about your business this way. And like I said, another book that I highly recommend is by Mike Michalowicz called Profit First. And y'all, I'm going to be honest, I'm very grateful to own a business that has been incredibly successful for a lot of years, over 20 years, and, you know, high six, you know, low seven figure. Like, we've done very well in photography. Okay. But I know that when I studied Profit First and implemented it into my business, and I loved it so much that I became a certified professional guide for them because I love it so much. This is an idea that I think could help. Set up five coffee cans or five, or more realistically, bank accounts if you can, but set them up or earmark money so that if you want to have an education account so that you can go to those, you want to go to Texas school, you want to go to Oklahoma State Convention, you want to go to Imaging USA, WPPI, whatever it is, SYNC, whatever it is, you say, well, I need to, every time I make a dollar, I got to put 5% of that in that coffee can or that bank account or that funnel or whatever it is. I'm going to put 5% there. I'm going to put 10% for profit. I know I need to put, 20% for cost of goods. I'm going to put 50% in for operating or whatever it is, and really separate your money to the point where I'm maybe twice a month, you look at what you brought in, and I don't care if it's $100 or $100,000, and you decide on your percentages and you put little percentages away. And of course you should have a tax account. Everyone should have a tax account, but you put those percentages away. So when that bill is due, the money's there. If we wait until we say, I'm going to imaging all year, and then imaging rolls around and you're like, well, shit, I don't have any money. You know what I mean? So you run up a credit card or you sleep in the car, God forbid, or whatever it is. So you're not going to magically make it appear. But what I will tell you is you won't miss that 5% or 10% as you move through the year. And it'll be there at the end so that you can go to imaging, or you know what? You may go in there and go, well, I can not only go to imaging, but I can take my family on vacation this year, or I'm going to take a profit check. And that's a good darn feeling. And that's when you know, wow, I am a sustainable, profitable business. So that simple little thing that we used to probably make fun of our mom or grandmother or whatever that they did, it's that philosophy. And I promise you, if you would separate your bank account out, every deposit out, I happen to do it on the 1st and the 15th. You can do whatever days of the month you want, maybe once a month. You might be shocked what ends up being in that bank account when the year is over.
Yeah, I actually I've read the book, and my CPA actually introduced me to the Profit First.
Oh, that's great.
And she was on the show last episode.
If
you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. There's more specifics in there. But that's really cool because you had a different take on it. Have an education account or whatever account it is you want to create, and have that account separate. And I actually have 5 checking accounts. For that very thing. So do you have 5 only, or do you have an extra one like that?
I don't have an extra one. I only brought that up because Robert is right. It's an epidemic. It's a great epidemic, but our industry is very wired that way. You know what that might compare to for you and I, it may be your profit account. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At the point where I am in my business and with what we make, it's rolled into, like Robert said, my operating. I have education and membership and subscriptions rolled into that. And I know it's a hefty percentage, not a hefty. I mean, I know I'm going to put, 10% or something, into it because we travel. I went to Africa this year, we do some cool stuff and that gets to roll in. But, if you're starting out, maybe instead of having that profit account, maybe that's what you're going to use your profit for, and then you can roll it back in as a business expense. Now, I'm not an accountant, but I don't have an additional account. I keep the 5, but I do keep my tax account and my profit account at a completely separate bank that I don't have the app on my phone. I just transfer the money from my, desktop, and I don't think about that money.
Yeah.
It's always nice to go at the end of the year. And honestly, that's how I bought my car.
Wow, that's cool.
That's what I use my check for.
So, which Range Rover did you get?
It's the biggest one.
Oh,
so you got the brand new one?
Yeah, it's a big one. It's the Land Rover.
The new Land Rover Discovery.
No, it's not the Discovery. It's the big one, like the Range Rover.
Oh, you got the Range Rover, the big Range Rover.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully we get a ride in that eventually soon.
Come to Virginia. I'll give you a ride.
Wow.
Okay. I can put that at the title. Come to Virginia and I will get a ride.
That
sounded
terrible. Do not make that the title.
That did sound bad.
Protect me.
She's not going to protect you. She can't protect you. Okay. So this is incredible information.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
cool. And I think the new people are going to really enjoy it. There's a few things I want to touch on just because I've had people ask me, and I want to make sure that they get good information because, sometimes if your parents tell you, hey, don't touch that stove, it's hot, they don't listen to you. But if their friend comes over and says, hey, don't touch that stove, it's hot, they're like, oh, yeah, the sky's purple. So we're using you as our expert because you are profitable.
Yeah.
So when someone listened to the show right now, when should they implement this type of system? Should they wait till the beginning of the year?
No.
Tomorrow.
No. Tomorrow.
That's the number one thing. If you read the book, Mike's so smart. He actually spoke at Imaging, I think, 2 years
yes,
ago.
Yes, he did.
When we were in Atlanta. Yeah. And tomorrow, don't wait. Guys, this is, here's another thing, you know, about this industry. Well, when I'm successful, when I'm this, when I'm that, when, you know, no, start now. I mean, and maybe your percentages are really low. Put 1%. Just put one, start with just two, you know, three accounts, a tax account, this, you know, profit account, whatever you want to call it. And you're, if that's all you can start with and just put away, your tax money needs to be put away, mm-hmm. period. But just put 1% and then make a goal in 6 months that maybe it's going to move to 5 or 2 or 10, whatever it is, but start now. Habits, you know, that's another book, Atomic Habits by James Clear. Like if you talk about habits, I don't even think about it anymore. It just is a natural, it's just part of breathing for me. I don't tell myself every morning to brush my teeth. I just automatically go in and brush my teeth. Well, that's how this type of accounting system, in my opinion, should become in your business. It should just be second nature. It should not even occur to you that it's anything but just normal.
So I have heard this a lot from Jim. I have something similar, but I do not have a profit one. I do have a tax account. Mm-hmm. And we do have another account that's kind of like savings, and it's mainly for replacing equipment because I break a lot of gear. Mm-hmm. But I do like this, and this seems to be very popular. I hear a lot of people talking about this Profit First program.
Yes.
And he has a podcast, too. And,
he has a podcast. Yeah. We'll put the links on
his
there.
His website has all the resources, like these calculators to figure out your percentage and all that stuff.
Where is the app that will automate this for me? Like, yeah, and, you know, it, so here's a great question. You are a very successful photographer, very creative and very talented. So do you handle your own money? I mean, do you go in there yourself and do it, or do you hire someone to do it for you?
Well, yeah. So I do have a financial person who does it for me. Okay. However, I coach and mentor a lot of photographers, and I've coached them through this process, and they do it themselves just fine. And it, you know, it's very easy to do. You know, nowadays everything's automatic. You get on your desktop, it's on your calendar. I'm a big agenda person, so put it on your calendar. So you go in that day, and the first thing you do, or the last thing you do, is you transfer those monies into those accounts, and it's done. It's nothing different than paying bills online or anything else. It's like paying another bill. One thing I would love to bring up if I have a minute.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you're a big event photographer, so events, weddings, you know, whatever, where you're collecting a hefty or any, quite frankly, any payment or retainers, deposits, whatever you call them in your state or Commonwealth, if you're collecting those up front, I do recommend another account. So Jim, when you asked me that, we do keep a separate retainer account because we still do weddings and events. If I get that money up front, I do not touch it until I have photographed the event or wedding or what have you. I just don't touch it. And, you know, I think a lot of people with this pandemic hitting, that was something that hit a lot of event and wedding photographers super hard, is that they had spent the money and the events were now not happening. And there was no retainers to give back.
Yeah.
So I know there's been a lot of heat and a lot of issues here in my area with those type of, with event and wedding photographers. But if you can, you have not delivered that service yet. You know, that money, or at least a good part of that money, should be put aside.
That's a great tip.
You know.
Yeah. And also, shoot, it's gone now.
It's gone?
Yeah, it's gone.
It just completely disappeared. Well, the reason I brought up if you did it yourself versus someone else is I guess my point is a lot of young photographers do not realize what their cost of goods are until they start looking every week at their bank account and realize, oh, well, there's $9 for Hulu. There's $15 for Disney Plus. There's $6 for this app that I am addicted to. And you quickly can rack up these $5 and $10 charges every month. And if you're not actively involved in your finances at the beginning of your business, it's going to be very hard for you to understand where your money's going and how you can move that around to be profitable.
Well, you're right. But so And I hope my internet's okay, guys. No. Getting this weird signal.
No, you're good.
You know, the issue I have with that is, you know, rule number one is do not commingle these funds, y'all. If your business money should be in business accounts. You should not be paying your personal Visa. You should not be covering your car payment unless the studio owns it. Like, you need to not commingle funds. Like, commingling funds is a huge no-no. So if you're new and you need advice, you know, join a BNI group, join a networking group that maybe has a financial person you can trade some, you know, services with, or reach out to a mentor in your affiliate. Do something to get set up correctly, because when you start commingling those funds, I worked with a photographer one time and I was wondering what all these expenses were, and it was his wife's clothing. And I'm like, you can't charge, your studio can't pay for your wife's clothes, sir. Like, that's just not a running a business.
Well, those are not clothes. You know. Those are props for boudoir sessions.
Oh, okay. Well, not every month. They're not.
You still can't claim those.
Oh my God. That
like,
is
like, yeah, owning a jet ski or a, you know, a Corvette. That's because it's a prop for your senior.
It is. It's a prop. That's what my motorcycle is written off as. It's written off as a prop. Okay. Yeah. Maybe not.
And that
maybe
can
not
happen, but
no, but there's a lot of expenses that I feel that photographers have, including myself. And it's those annual subscriptions that you buy, mm-hmm, and then you kind of forget about it until it pops in your email. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, this is $29. I haven't even used this app in 8 months.
Or $150.
Oh, yeah, you know, the best way to do that is to cancel your credit, call your credit card company and say, look, I feel like my annual subscriptions are out of control. I can't even track them. I want to replace my card. My card was not stolen. I just want to replace it, and tell them do not honor any recurring charges. And trust me, they will pop up like crazy. That's one of the first things we did when the pandemic hit and we were shut down.
Wow.
And I saved over $700 this year by doing that.
Oh my God. Okay. That right there was worth the price of the phone call.
Well,
finally, I got my money's worth. Thank you.
Unless it's coming out of your personal account or your business account.
I canceled my business card and my personal card. And the $700 was actually for my business. My personal was probably a little more because I have two college age kids that are also on that card. Yeah. Mm.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have one of those.
So I was going to say earlier is, you know, those events that you have the retainer for, you also need a contract in place that states, and this is something that I've got to tweak my contract for, because I had some cancellations too. But, you know, if you've got a deposit in there or whatever you want to come up with as far as a contract, say, you know, this is non-refundable, whatever it is, because you'll have to pay it back if you don't have it in there. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the contracts can be kind of difficult, I feel. Like, when I do my weddings, I want a $500 non-refundable retainer. Mm-hmm. And I tell the bride and groom, like, most of your vendors get paid 3 weeks out. You don't know what's going to happen next year. Like, right now, I'm talking to a bride for the 20th of February of 2021. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we're going to go ahead and send you a deposit. And I'm like, no, I don't want it. Send me $500 to hold the day. And then 3 weeks before your wedding, you can pay me the balance. Because if you have to cancel your wedding, if I can get paid $500 for my day to sit on the couch and watch TV with my kids, I'm happy.
Mm. But okay? You don't actually do that.
I don't actually do that. I never do that. I am always working.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want them to give me that money because I don't want to have that opportunity where I could spend it. But obviously, by having the accounts and having that inbound account, I guess would be a good word for it, an ingress account, where you bring in the money and then you're not going to move it to your other accounts for usage until you've at least photographed the account or photographed the client. That's an excellent idea.
Absolutely great.
I love that idea.
I do too.
Yeah, that's what we've done that for 26 years. You know, but we take a $1,000 retainer. And then we don't take the balance of the contract until 2 weeks, up to 2 weeks before the wedding. But so I agree with you there. But that $1,000, and a lot of times I don't move it. So it's kind of cool. Sometimes that money just adds up. If I don't need it, I don't touch it. And then that'll become Jamie's slush fund for equipment. <That's what
laughs> Oh, I like that. Okay. Yeah. So for any type of photographer in business, and you have helped a lot of photographers with their money and financial stuff, what's the common denominator for failure?
Fear. It's fear. I mean,
is it fear or negativity?
Nobody will buy prints. Nobody's going to do this. Nobody in my market would ever pay more than this. It's all fear. It's all brain trash. It's the stuff we lay in bed and tell ourselves at night because we've just decided that that's how it's going to be. But it's mindset and fear. I mean, and then maybe the second a close runner up would be this illusion that, you know, it's not costing me a penny. So if I charge $250 and deliver 25 beautiful files, fully retouched, you know, we can give them the licensing or usage, I'm making money because it's not costing me anything. Well, you're not realizing the amount of time and energy you're forfeiting from your life, from your family, from your relationships, and from your mental health. And it'll wear you down and it's not sustainable.
Yeah, we call that stripper math. That's for the young photographers. That's you know, funny. You ask them like, oh, what kind of photography you do? And they're like, oh, I want to do weddings. Well, why do you do weddings? Well, because it's really fun. And, you guys get paid a lot of money. No, you're seeing how much we're collecting. You're not seeing all the hours on the back end that we're working for the money we're collecting.
And all the stuff we just talked about.
So we call it stripper math. You know, a stripper makes $100 on a pole. She gets to put $100 in her pocket and go home with it. You know, we don't get to do that. Every money that we get, we're paying somebody else, either federal government or something.
She has expenses. She has to buy all her little clothes and stuff.
She has sugar daddy.
Strippers have a lot of expenses. You might be surprised because you think about upkeep and working. You know, if you're a good stripper, I don't know.
You know, all the little.
There's a lot that goes into them looking good on that pole and making the good money.
This is going to be the sound sample.
They probably have.
This is going to be the sound sample.
Yes.
Okay, that's a great one.
Yes.
Is future stripper president of PPA breaks down stripper expenses.
Stripper expenses. That's going to be really, really good.
That's awesome.
You're going to get that phone call. But, you know, actually, we had another two board members on here a few years ago, Boo Ray and Gary.
Well, they were just on here recently, too.
And they were on here recently. Yeah. But when we were at PPA at Imogen, they sat down, they started dropping the F-bomb in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they're on the PPA board, though.
Oh, no, they're not. They were counselors.
Counselors, yeah.
Counselors.
Counselors, yeah.
Okay, so PPA board members are
once. I'd love for Boo Ray and Gary to be on the board, but I don't think they are, yeah.
So I just want to say this, Mary.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've been told this before, like at your classes or whatever, but I'm being honest. I'm not trying to be funny. If I could, like, capture you and have you around, like, in my pocket all the time, and just carry you around and say, what should I do? And, you know, is this a good decision?
Oh, my God. Did you not see the latest episode that they had on their podcast? You didn't, did they?
No.
Well, she just came out with a whole line of what would Mary do, T-shirts and wristbands.
You know
wristbands.
He's bullshitting you. That's
not true. Shoot. I know that.
I was going to stop you right there, Robert.
Yeah. They even have a line of wine. would Mary not do?
That is so sweet of you to say. Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot of years. And again, giving all, you know, glory to the, you know, the shoulders of the amazing mentors and the affiliates, my state, my being a part of PPA. I mean, so much has been given to me. It makes me really happy to be able to give back a little bit. So that's exactly, I'm so grateful that I can do that.
Yeah. And I've always heard good things about your classes. Always. Never heard anything bad. You know, it's, awesome. I'm sorry. I haven't.
No, I had to go on the Mary Fitz Taylor bandwagon when Terry went to her class like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, Mary said this and Mary said that.
I remember
Mary
that.
Mary said this and Mary said that. And I'm like, oh my God,
shut up.
Just because she's good looking doesn't mean she has to ruin my life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Robert.
No, not at all. Because she did come up with some really good points from your class and it really did help us out in some areas. My problem is I think I spend too much. That's my problem.
That's my problem.
That's all of our problem. I'm with you there. I get it. Just have to work a little harder. You know what? When you realize you want to spend a little more, you want to maybe take this or buy this or do that, you know what I do? I look at my calendar and go, okay, where can I realistically put 2 or 3 more sessions on the books? Because I know my averages. I have them pretty nailed down. So if I can get 2 or 3 more sessions on the books, that means I should yield XYZ. Now, obviously, you have to have a sales plan and a good marketing plan, but that's for another podcast. But you know what? Just say, I'm going to look for 2 more sessions, and that's going to give me this money, and then I can buy this.
I like this podcast. This has been awesome. Well, Mary,
it has, and I think we should probably cut it down right now?
We should go ahead and cut it off. We got the good information.
Yeah, let the listeners know the best place to go find you and find more information that you have to offer and more stuff about you.
Yeah, this is your 5-minute plug. Go.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I don't have much to plug. So, you know, you can follow me on, you know, social media at Mary Fisk Taylor, or I actually have a website, maryfisktaylor.com. And after you've listened to this amazing podcast, if you need more podcasts in your life, Kira Derryberry and I have a podcast called Get Your Shoot Together. And we're on YouTube, and anywhere you find podcast thingies, you can find us. And we also have a website. You can go from there or social media.
She should not be successful and be allowed to say podcast thingies.
No kidding.
It's like counterproductive.
Well, I'm not sure what it's called. Like, you know, the podcast thingy where you find podcasts.
I think they're called players.
That's what happens. When you become this famous at her level, you don't have to worry about the details. You just say, like, it's a thingy.
Yeah.
It's a thingy. Give me that thingy that I use to take pictures of people. Just give me that thingy.
Yeah.
It's okay. Put that thingy lens on it or whatever. That little glass thing. Put that on there.
Yeah, that's
awesome. She's amazing. Well, Mary, stay on the line for a second. We're going to go ahead and sign off, and that way we can wrap it up. So don't go anywhere when we put you on hold. And listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Mary, thank you so much for all the efforts you do in our industry. We really appreciate you spending some time with our listeners.
Yep.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks, y'all.
All right.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.